Hi, welcome to our lunchtime date together with me, John Ballum. I am an organizational development consultant, I'm an educator, and I'm a coach with a passion for lifelong learning. With me today is my partner in crime, Gifty.
Hi everyone, I'm Gifty Parker, HR professional with a background in learning and development, performance management, as well as talent management.
So for the next 20 minutes, we invite you to sit back, find a glass of something nice, and enjoy an unusual conversation with us. Now, I want to go sideways here because you said such an important thing. You said, how do we, you know, encourage this feedback and how do we prevent people shutting down? And again, I'll tell you a personal story from my educational background, which was such a revelation to me. So at one stage in my life, I was a school guidance counselor and I set up a series of meetings for parents, you know, who is dealing with, you know, problematic teenagers to support them. And in one of these meetings, I invited this very gifted psychologist to speak. And I remember to all these parents, she asked them this question. She said, how many of you have said to your children in a moment of anger, if you ever lie to me, I will never trust you again? And about 80% of the parents' hands went up because they were being honest. And she said, okay, forgivable, but I want to show you a better way. She said, and try never to do that again. Because the reality is you've lied to your parents. You continue probably lying now, and your children are going to lie to you some more. Okay, because lying is learning. And I was like, I was stunned. You know, I was thinking, okay, well, this is a big paradigm shift for me. And then she went on to say, she said, a more appropriate response to your child is, you will lie to me sometimes, and it's not okay, but I don't blame you for it. When you can, come tell me if you've lied to me, and we can talk about why you lied, okay? But I accept it's going to lie, and I will trust you, even if you lie to me again, because we're going to have a conversation about that hopefully at some stage, and I'm open to that conversation, okay? Because I lied to my parents too because I was frightened. And then she said, we've got to ask ourselves as parents why our children lie to us. Why? Because maybe we are making them afraid of telling the truth. And it was a huge paradigm shift for everybody in that hall. And it was a huge paradigm shift for my young educational mind as well, to see a much more mature approach to why we transgress, you know, why these things happen, and the learning that is potentially there if we bring down the fear. And we bring down the angst and the punishment and the punitive. And you know, fear can be many things. You know, a manager can just say something sharp at a meeting to an employee. I've seen it happen. Mm-hmm. You've seen it happen. Mm-hmm. And you can see, you know, the person cowers or just the eyes drop. And you know, what? That's shut down. You know, the learning is ended here, you know. So, yeah, it really is about managers getting a grip on their irritability and their feelings of frustrations and their projections and just pulling it back.
Yeah, pulling it back.
One of my best managers, you know, I had this metaphor about him. I used to say he created a cool pool because no matter how busy or how stressed he was, it always felt like relaxed around him. You never projected that stress outward. You never thought, oh, today's a bad day to talk to him. You're very seldom because he had this cool energy around him. Like there's always time. And it was he could chat to you. And then I was like, oh, yeah. And it's that cool pool, which takes a lot of work, but it's a beautiful thing when you see it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. You know, I always love these sections where we can, you know, talk about what we really have gone through. And, you know, I'm looking for that opportunity to actually get to hear from our listeners as well. You know, what kind of answer our provocative questions, you know, tell us exactly what they're going through. Because it's very interesting how we can actually form this community of learning, you know, community of learners, because we tap from one another's experiences. So community of practice. Yeah. So kind of share. So I really love it. I love our topics. I love that we can share our experiences, you know, holding back the information of the clients, the people. It's actually very insightful. So we're going to go on and look at the second area we wanted to cover today, which is the reimagining the physical space. Now, while we talk about hybrid work, we also are aware that there are some people who have to be in that physical space, who have to, you know, remain as they were before the pandemic.
Right.
So I think in this particular area, we want to be able to look at how they can continuously make ways for collaborating, innovating, building a beautiful community where they can still, you know, embrace other stakeholders who are not in the physical space. Because even when you're in the physical space, you may have stakeholders who are not in the physical space, and you still need to correspond with them. And even you in the physical space, what can we do to make sure that your needs that have changed during the pandemic is actually being looked into? So, John, do you have any experience or any clients of yours that are still working in the physical space, and what are they doing to, you know, ensure that their employees are still well cared for in terms of what they would need?
Yeah, so I do. I mean, I think one of the key things is basic ergonomics, you know, and I wish if I had my way, I'd have every single manager do a course in ergonomics and understanding the basics of office furniture, lighting, you know, and oxygen levels in the building and the whole trip that goes with that. Because there's some key things which, you know, nobody is going to give you that manager of the year award for. But if those environmental things are dealt with in the office, it becomes a lot more pleasant place to be. And in fact, I've had some employees say this to me, and it's quite damning actually, said, you know, it was so great to get out of that office. And my natural assumption was, oh, they were fighting with somebody or clashing with somebody. And I say, why? And they say words to effect, because I'm now in a fresh space. And I mean, and I said, you're home. They said, yes. You know, it would have cost such a little bit of money to have just made it a little more comfortable, you know?
Agreed.
So this idea that home's comfortable, but office, you know, workplace has to be a little hard, you know, a little tough, you know, keep us all on our toes or whatever, or, you know, we also get soft. That's rubbish. People's comfort levels are, you know, I go back in my memory again to when we worked together and used kind of, well, not stormed, but you were pretty forthright about it, came to our office and said, I want a new office chair, you know? And I thought, hallelujah, somebody understands.
I'm actually going to interrupt you there, John, because this actually happened for both of us. I remember I joined a college at Greystone, and given my height, I needed a new chair.
I know.
And I remember going to you. This is actually real. I had a space that I inherited, and the chair there was one that I had to squat. Like it was really uncomfortable. You know, and I had to kind of bend, and height of decks on the chair was very uncomfortable. And this is actually very good to share with our listeners, because I went to John and I said, you know what? This chair is not comfortable. I would, you know, really like to have something more comfortable. And John, being the head of the campus, was like, you know what? Have a look online. Tell me what you need. And for me, that was the feeling that what I needed to get my work done, what I needed to be productive, was really considered. And you know what? It actually helped me to think about cutting as well. So I was looking for something that wasn't too expensive, but also equally comfortable for me. And that was it. I found the chair, and John was like, okay, that's it, done. Go get it. And that was powerful. That was so powerful that my needs were important. My comfort was important. And that, if anything, made me even love my job more. So I'm actually talking about this because that's how I felt. And people feel that way, right? So sorry I had to interrupt you, but this is a story I had to share.
It's cool, you know, because the kind of back end of that, Gifty, is what I know about human nature. And it's this. If people, because they don't think they're worthy enough or they're frightened or whatever, suppress those human needs. Like, for example, they sit crunched up under their desk or in an uncomfortable position, right? And they are able to suppress that and continue with their work. That need does not go away. Then it comes out in another way, which is very destructive. Either they get crabby with their fellow workers, or they project it onto something else in the organization which can't be changed. But that anger and that frustration is going to surface somewhere else. Yeah, and it's going to impact the business. And it's going to hurt the business. Yeah. And so the more unconscious of people are of just their raw physicality in the workspace, actually, the less productive they are, the more damage gets done to the business in the long run. Okay.
Yeah, I agree.
So when you came and asked, I thought, thank God, here's somebody who's really conscious. Okay. And that's the type of person I want to employ. Okay. That level of consciousness. So, hey, it would work both ways. I can assure you. The other interesting thing about that story was something that wasn't mindless. It was what I learned from one of my managers, was there are many times when you can give the employees and empower them with a decision to find the solution that is best for them. Like sitting in a chair is not a personal thing. We all have different kind of our bodies and what we want out of a chair, right? So that's why, you know, one of my senior managers once said to me, there's some things like the pen the person holds, like the desk they sit in, like the chair, if you can give them the autonomy to choose that for themselves, that's a fine thing. You know, and he was right. He was absolutely right. So this is what you're saying about the workspace. Let me add something else here. It's about personalizing the workspace. You see?
Mm-hmm.
See, our homes are personalized.
Yeah.
And then we go to these like uniform workspaces, you know, which are prescribed to us.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, there's a
I love the word prescribed to us. Yeah.
Prescribed
and,
right? You know,
and like prescription, which would change, could change. There is no change. There is no accommodation for the changes that you will go through, right? Because it may be prescribed to me at a certain time, given certain circumstance, doesn't mean that will be the same, you know, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. So, yeah, I love that ideology, that personalized space.
Because you see, what happens in life, to my mind anyway, is that we have good experiences in one area of our lives, and then we want that experience to translate. So we have a comfortable home. We want a comfortable office. It's often unconscious. Okay, so we have this feeling that one must be congruent. Our worlds mustn't be so disparate. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In South Africa, you know, I shared this with you before, I think, but it was repeating. When I consulted to this private hospital group and they wanted to find out why their patients, there was a big disconnect with some of the intake of their patients. It's because when you went to a hotel, you know, which room would you like? And you get options. When you got to this private hospital, you got told sleep in that bed, you know, but you were paying a lot of money, more than you paid for the hotel, but you got told, hey, you, and the whole command structure of the hospital, like take this, eat this, do this. You know, and the nurses like a badge is like military on their shoulders. Like, you know, it's can you see? You go to a hotel, would you like, what can we do for you today? You know, it's the hospital, it suddenly becomes this. And the private hospital, to its credit, shifted a whole bunch of that paradigm for its patients. It's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it takes us to the final step that we're covering today, which is managing the fundamental human needs. You know, we always have to understand that our people have needs and those needs are not going to be the same. So if you're in a room and you're making a strategic decision based on the perspective of two people, then you want to ask yourself, have I actually considered the entire group of people that I have just based on the perspective of two? Can I include others? And it also doesn't always have to be monetary. There's so many non-monetary ways you could actually meet the human needs of your team. And you can even get them, put them to work, let them come up with the ideas, let them come up with a solution. This is our limitation budget-wise. What can we do? So remote employees, even those in this physical space, they are complaining about the difficulty of being connected to their colleagues, connected to their clients, connected to other external stakeholders. And they also complain about managing their work-life boundaries. And that becomes important because today we're not looking at work-life balance because you can't do, one cannot be without the other. We're looking at work-life integration. And when we're looking at work-life integration, what are we doing as organizations? I had an interview the other day and I could hear a baby crying in the background.
Uh-huh.
It was very faint, really, really faint. And I know this lady I'm interviewing is just coming out of a maternity and something said, you know, give the interrupter. So I interrupted. I was like, I'm really sorry to interrupt you. There's a noise in your background. Is that your baby? She was like, yes. She kept talking. She kept talking and didn't want to go attend to a baby. And for me, That was important. That was very important. And I told her, you know what? Why don't you go attend to your baby? Switch off the camera. I'll switch off the camera. I need to take a quick break anyway. Don't log off. Attend to your baby and come back on, and you don't need to have your camera on. Because it was actually towards the end of the interview. If it wasn't, I would have told her, okay, let's do it some other time.
Right.
And, you know, she came back on and we spoke more like a phone conversation just to make clarification about the final thing. Now, I don't know how she felt, but I felt worried. Like, she was going to continue the interview without, you know, attending. That was, for me, it was very important to be able to see we need to take a moment. And this becomes difficult for organization with 1,500 employees, 3,000 employees, but it's feasible. You know, you can appoint people whose sole role is to check in. You can use technology to capture data on your people, their needs. And these needs do change. And how are you keeping up in terms of the changes?
Yeah.
Another gap, before I actually ask you a question, is organizations are actually working hard to meet the fundamental needs of the employee. For example, meeting their healthcare needs. And also, I recall last week, I was preparing for a meeting with a set of employees, and I asked the coordinator, and I said, okay, what are some of the health care services you have for your employees? And she was telling me about some services that they have, some online options that they adopted during the COVID. And I said, oh, that's great. That's beautiful. Do employees have this? So she sent me a PDF for my review. And I said, oh, this is very interesting. Do your employees have this? And she said, I don't know. We emailed them when it came on that we have that, but I don't know if they know about it. And, you know, again, big gap. Some people actually take the effort to create solutions or to create options for their employee around their work-life integration or their health, and they don't communicate it. And guess what? The employees didn't know about it because they joined later.
Bingo.
So it was just, so yeah, so for this particular topic, I wanted to ask John a question, you know, from your experience. We know companies are trying to support remote employees and they're trying to help with employee well-being. Are there things that they should consider for their employees, whether they're in the physical space or whether they are hybrid?
What should they consider for well-being?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to go back to one example here of connectivity, because connectivity, human connectivity is 90% of it. If we are bound together in community and we're talking to each other and we're growing that community, then we can solve many problems, right? But that's the first step. So one of my clients, and this is a lovely example, has remote employees and they have an office. In that main office, there are one or two cameras running all the time, which just are showing you the office happening on its daily basis, okay? And each employee can log into those cameras so they can actually see what's going on. They can see people walking around the office. And so they can actually see the daily life of the office happening as though they were in that office themselves, right? The employees have the option of also turning their camera on when they want, so the other people can see them going about their daily work. You know, they're working on their computer, they're picking up a call or whatever it is. So there's this kind of window of transparency created, these two worlds. And it's kind of like, you know, my daughter with her friends. You know, they have tablets on and they're busy doing all sorts of things around the house. And people come and go in and out of these virtual spaces. But they do this because they just want to be connected to each other. They're not always all talking to each other at the same time. But they just have this fluidity or transparency. Like, okay, they can't physically be together. They started this in the pandemic. But we can actually be in this cyberspace together for a couple of hours. And they do. You know, the mothers pop in and say hi to everybody. It's quite crazy. I mean, when I saw it happen, I was like, wow, this is actually fantastic. It's very new to me, but it's fantastic. And so I think the one thing is create, you know, formalized spaces and create informal spaces which link these worlds together in an easy, and like the example you gave just now of the mother, inviting the mother into the meeting, being sensitive to the needs, all of that is really, really critical.
Yeah, yeah. I think the word I love to use is collaboration equity.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, we cannot expect that benchmark across the group. Yeah. We have to, you know, pay attention and look at what is happening with our team and how can we support them. That's a very good one. Now, another interesting thing is, I believe in our note, I made a comment and I talked about, I think I wrote that remote work does not necessarily come with a cost of productivity. And I further wrote that many companies have reported increased productivity and also shared a McKinsey and Company analysis that found that 20% of the workforce could work remotely 3 to 5 days a week as effectively as somebody working from the office. And then you gave a very interesting response and you said, great, but I worry about the short term versus the long term. Could you tell us a little bit about what you mean there?
That's a nice one for me. Well, it goes like this, that in a crisis or under pressure, we can all exhibit what let's call it short-term coping behaviors, okay, because we have to do it. We have to cope, okay? And essentially, these behaviors are not supported by long-term values that we hold or well-established skill sets, okay? Mm-hmm. So they're very exhausting for all of us, and that's what why stress does this to us, because we have to act in ways maybe we're not trained for, but you just to cope, right? But and we do it, and it looks very impressive. Yeah, and it can be very effective, and it can save the day, and all those things. But what we really need to interrogate is, do I want to do this long term? Is this really what I'm cut out for? And do I have the deep set of values and deeply embedded skill set that will enable me to continue with this set of behaviors productively? And that's a whole nother question.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother question.
I agree.
So the trouble is the pandemic was a crisis, but we mustn't norm what we do in a crisis as our daily behavior or our daily way of being, okay? Thank God we all have this capacity to react, and I'm not knocking that, and it's a pretty heroic stuff. But heroic action typically is very short-lived. That's why I'm always on about post-heroic, because, you know, heroic action saves the day, but we need to maintain the day, not just save it.
So I actually agree with you. I do. And, you know, it brings us back to what we've talked about the entire time, you know, remote work for whom, you know, what set of people and
right.
What do they prefer doing? Because I, on one hand, I think I'm cut off for remote work. I actually have a high preference for it, but I'm also mindful that not everyone would prefer that. And I'm also aware that there are some circumstances where people would prefer to see me in person. I have clients who, yes, they embrace remote work. They're happy with a quick call with me, but they like me to be there. They're like, okay, we want to sit gift today. And I appreciate that. And I want to do that as well. And when it comes to onboarding, I like that physical being there when I can. So yes, we always have to think for different people will come different preference, different needs to be considered. Uh-huh. And that need can go everything from personal needs to other needs that are non-personal, like the use of technology, the completion of the work, is the something that can be done in that particular way or best done that particular way, physical space or hybrid.
So it's interesting you say this, because I come from, like you do, I come from a pretty collective society in Africa. And I have this very interesting conversation with some of my friends in Africa who battle their HR consultants like us or change and stuff to help their clients transition. And the reason the battle is because it's almost a shameful thing to say, actually, I want to work independently, okay? Because then you're seen as, no. You don't want to be part of this group. You want to pull apart from us, you know? Now, that exists here too, believe it or not, okay? Because some people, you know, feel this like, that's like telling my colleagues, you know, take a trip to the other side of the universe, you know, it's an insult. And we got to help people adjust in teams, and we got to help those people realize that, no, it's fine to feel that way. It doesn't mean you're socially dysfunctional. It doesn't mean that at all. So I'm going through the struggle with a couple of my friends in Africa now who are trying to get this, trying to deal with this remote ticket, trying to get people to say that it's okay to, because they're too guilty to say. Separate from the group.
They don't want to be, you know, singled out as not wanting to.
Yeah, I agree. Just interesting. Yeah. Well, I think we're at the end today. Thanks for your time.
Yes.
As always.
We're at the end today. As always, I love and I appreciate John's idea of us reflecting and, you know, emphasizing on what we take from the conversation. I'm very positive I went the last time, John. And you just came back from a vacation. So you're going first.
I'm going, okay. Okay, my learning from today. That story you told about the mother with that child, it really hit me hard because my wife, breakfast this morning, told me a similar story. She was in a class last night where the teacher told the mother to bring the child into the classroom, young child as well. And so why it hit me hard was because I realized that very much that, and I hope this doesn't offend people when I say it, but the patriarchal model still infects business, you know, and we've got to deconstruct that patriarchal model and become much more sensitive to the whole human experience, which is, you know, children, family. If we're going to talk about things like connectivity and the hybrid organization, there are a bunch of dynamics there, which it's not so much the practices, it's the, first of all, the attitudes and values we've got to change to accept that these worlds actually are going to come together in a way that is not necessarily counterproductive, but it'll just make us all more human and better people. So that, yeah, it was a beautiful story. And it's funny that you should share it today when I'd heard another one of those stories at breakfast. So thank you.
Thank you, John. Thank you. I think for me, the takeaway, and when we think about all the areas, the three areas we talked about today for our listeners, we talked about embracing the hybrid model. We talked about reimagining the physical workplace. We talked about managing the fundamental human needs. It's all about people. And we have to sort of continuously remember to focus on people. Focus on people as we all navigate these new work models that are out there and make changes based on those people. You know, and I find that even sometimes when you are not able to meet the needs of your team, it could be financial limitations, it could be scope of your business, being a limitation, communicate it, connect to them, relate it to them, let them understand it. It's all about the people. And we may forget, we do forget, we get so busy. We always have to keep reminding ourselves, people. Focuses on the people. I think that's the takeaway for me, because when we look at everything we talked about, it's all about the people.
I agree. That's why we do what we do, Gifty. That's why we do it.
Yeah, that's why we do what we do.
Okay.
Excellent.
Until next time, this is Gifty Parker and John Barlum.
Remember, during your busy week ahead, stay good. Stay true and stay beautiful.
Bye-bye.